Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another edition of Spotlight Conversations, where we have candid conversations with jazz musicians, poets, and anyone in that industry dealing with these two genres of jazz and poetry. Today, we're very fortunate, and I'm so glad to have with me a vocalist, poetess, promoter, you know, just an all-around entertainer. So I'd like to say hello and welcome to Toni Mama T. Curtis, the Spotlight Conversation.
Good afternoon, Clay.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, well, how are you?
All right. So I'm so glad to finally get a chance to speak with you on Spotlight Conversations. You know, I was talking to the other person that's going to be part of Autumn Leaves in October 26, Spotlight on Jazz and Poetry's first fall event. So it's interesting to get your perspective on what's coming up. But give us a little background on you. Where are you from, and what were your early, or who were your early musical and poetic influences?
Well, my name is Toni Curtis. North Philly, born and raised. Let me say this. In elementary school, I joined a dance squad. I did modern dance and jazz dance. Had a great time, loved it. My influences early on, I would say, would be my parents. And I say that because my parents actually, and other family members. My father was constantly playing jazz through the house every day. He was playing jazz. My mother was playing gospel. My sister was playing hip hop. And my brother was playing old school Temptations, Four Tops. So the house was just always, there was always music flowing in the house. Now, I will say, although I took it all in at that time at a young age, the thing that I guess really brought me in was R&B and hip hop. Eventually, the jazz and the gospel started to creep in. But I would say that's because it was in the foundation. I do come from a musical family background. If you're familiar with the Underwoods had a band back way back in the 70s, and they did a lot. Gregory Underwood, Veronica Underwood, David Underwood. You know, those are my cousins.
Yeah, they were on the what you call it, like the cabaret circuit, right?
And doing all types of things. Now they were a big influence in my life. I enjoyed whenever I could going out to see them perform and just, you know, taking it all in. And just listening to family members playing, my uncle playing organ and piano, just blown away. Too shy to ask if I can possibly learn. Too shy to sing in front of the family because they were just, I was just so amazed by all the talent around me. I was a little too shy to jump in there from the vocal perspective. I had no problem dancing. At the age of, I would say, 14 and 15 is when I first sat down and wrote a song. I got my little heart broken and I wrote a song. And I remember listening to Stacey Lattice on the radio, and when I found out we were the same age, I said, what? She sings like that and we're the same age?
Yeah.
It was amazing. So I had a lot of different, I would say a lot of different things coming at me from different angles that influenced me as far as music and vocals and even poetry. I didn't start really writing poetry until later on in life. I was talking to a coworker of mine about Jill Scott. Her first CD had just dropped. And I talked about the fact that she was not only singing, she was doing poetry. And I said, I would love to do that. And he said, I'm sure you can do that. And I said, yeah, but he said, no, but I know you can do it, so do it. So I sat down one day and said, okay, And what I would do is walk to Penn's Landing every day after work and just sit there and just take on the scene, the water. And next thing I knew, I was just writing. And then I was writing. And then I was writing. And it's like I couldn't stop writing, you know. So I would say that's pretty much how things got started.
Yeah. And you mentioned Stacy Ladislaw. Didn't she grow up with, she was real good friends with Gerald Levert, right?
No.
Who am I thinking?
Why is his name not, it's on the tip of my tongue. Johnny Gill.
Right. Okay.
Johnny Gill. Yeah.
Right.
Another awesome.
And, but Jill Scott is another one. Look, North Philly got it going on, man. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so cool. So, the first time that I seen you, but I saw you coming from Joseph Pennell's elementary school, and you had mentioned to me that you were participating in some kind of poetry program up there.
Oh, no. Well, my grandson was a student there at the time, and they were doing a poetry slam.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I was there, you know, supporting that. And he did well with what he wrote. I was really proud of him. I was ready to jump in and say, well, try this and this, that, and the other. But once I read it, I said, oh, okay, let me shut up.
Yeah.
And let you do your thing.
I saw you perform there, and I was like, wow, it was real good. It was really good. And I never forgot it.
Never
forgot what I heard. And, you know, and then people would ask me, you heard of Tony Mama T. Curtis? And I was like, yeah, I heard her perform before, but it was just been a while. And then, everybody kept saying your name. So you must have hypnotized everybody. I don't know what you did.
Well, that's a compliment and a blessing.
Oh, yeah. So it was for me, especially after I got a chance to talk with you, you know, it was a no-brainer to try to get you to perform on this event that's coming up in a few weeks. What is it about jazz now, you know, since you were turned on in jazz? What is it about jazz and poetry that goes together so well?
The smoothness of it. For me, when I listen to jazz, what I hear are notes being maneuvered and manipulated and bent all types of ways. And it actually has an effect on me, you know, emotionally and mentally. It makes me feel really good and fulfilled, and it sometimes it makes me cry, you know, depending on the song. I can say hearing Ella, I'll give you an example, hearing Ella and the way she scats. Oh my God, it just blows me away. And this woman went on for 15 to 20 minutes and she's still going and just as smooth as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Just blows me away. And it just, it's a great feeling. It just feels good. I'm amazed with the way she was able to go into a mode where she was, her vocals really were an instrument,
mm-hmm.
a musical instrument, you know, and I just love it. I love it. You know, I think when I was younger and growing up, I did not appreciate jazz because there were a lot of jazz songs that I heard where there were no vocals. So therefore, you know, I was looking, waiting for the vocals. One day my father was listening to the jazz song Cloudburst. And I listened to that and I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, so there were certain things that he listened to. Summertime. Summertime is one of those songs that when I sing it, I can actually envision things. I can see things when it's being sung and when I'm singing it. Mm-hmm. So I just have such an appreciation for jazz that I did not have when I was growing up. It's totally different than listening to other genres of music.
Mm-hmm. When you said Cloudburst, you know, I'm not sure what version that you were talking about, but I go way back with jazz, you know what I mean? But the first version that I read, or the one that really gets me, is the one by the vocal group Lambert, Hendricks, and Ross.
Yep, that's the one.
Oh, okay.
That's the one.
And you know, hearing them do it, and then I heard Manhattan Transfer.
Yes.
Do it also.
Yes.
And, you know, that whole vocalese.
Yes, it is.
And Eddie Jefferson, mm-hmm. who's supposed to be like the godfather of vocalese, and also King Pleasure. I'm going back a little ways there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's how, the same way you were raised, I mean, I was mainly raised in a house with jazz. And, you know, of course, R&B, you know, Motown, all of that, gospel. But the main thing was jazz, because my parents, they ran a speakeasy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, you know, it was like that type of vibe. And, you know, that's how far back, that was back in the mid to late 60s when they had that. And I was like 10 years old, something like that. But I grew up in West Philly, and we used to have a finished basement, you know, pool table and speakers and a bar down there. It was like, you know, and my pop was a very, very well-known bartender.
Okay.
And gambler as well. And they used to have, you know, their sets down in the basement, and the record player, you know, drop one at a time, you know, one album at a time, was upstairs. And I was the guy that played the music.
Okay.
You know what we want to hear, Clayton? Put that music on. You know what we want to hear. And it was jazz. You know what I mean? It was Ella, mm-hmm. like you said, and Sarah Vaughan, Nancy Wilson is like my favorite vocalist of all time.
Yes.
You know, and then Cannonball, Miles, you know, and the list goes on and on. And while I was there playing those records, inside of the records, they called them the liner notes, where they had all the information and whatnot.
Yes.
That's where I got my education from. You know, repeating those records and listening to it, and then reading up on the artists and whatnot.
Yes.
And the poetry my mom used to write. You know, and she used to write a lot of sad stuff, a lot of love stuff, and, you know, whatever was going on in her life, that's what she used to write about. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That rubbed off on me as well. Do you think that the history of jazz is really important to our culture? What do you feel about that?
Yes, I think it is important to our culture, because just like with country music, a lot of us don't know where it originated. So it's very important to educate. It's very important to educate our youth, to let us know. Not only that, you know, a lot of things are being sampled and they don't know exactly where it's coming from, you know. So even with my children growing up, and even now with my grandchildren, if there's a certain song that's being played, I'll say, "Do you hear that part of the song?" And they say, "Yeah." I said, "Do you know where that came from?" And they're like, "No." So then I bring up the original, and then look at me like, "What?" I say, "Yeah, they sampled that." Or in some cases, you know, a lot of Disney movies, a lot of times will have, you know, music from back in the day. Mm-hmm. And my grandson would hear me singing something and he'd say, "How do you know that?" I said, because that came out in 19 so-and-so, you know. And he said, oh, then I let him hear the original. So it is very important to educate and let our youth know where this music came from.
Yeah. And I find myself doing the same thing you did, you know. You know, my children had the benefit of having me around all the time. And so I got to teach them firsthand. But other children that I've spoken to, a lot of their friends or whatever, you say something about jazz, they be like, oh man, that jazz, that's for old folks. You know, y'all intellectual, think y'all smarter than everybody or whatever. And I tell them, I say, yo, jazz is really accessible music. It really is. And they would be surprised today with how many, even back then, but they would be surprised at how many young people are playing this music and are appreciating this music. That's why Deborah Smith is like, you know, I really admire what she's doing, because, and she's pressing the issue. You know what I mean? Being a Temple University student, that's a whole, I really commend her for wanting to even pursue that music. But the history of it, I think, is very important because of basically where it came from. And it came from, I'm talking about the late 1800s, the early 1900s down in New Orleans or whatever. After the Spanish-American War, a lot of those brass instruments, they were just trashing them. You know what I mean? And of course, like everything else, black people, they could find something to do with it. You know what I mean? And they picked up these instruments and started, you know, playing their butts off. Same with food, chitlins. You know what I mean? Chicken feet. I'm being very serious because those were the scraps, and we turned it into gourmet food. I mean, you know, you try to get some chitlins down, boy. You know, they try to charge $900 a pound, where they was just throwing that stuff away.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So that just goes to show you how black people can be creative.
Yes.
With whatever they have in front of them. They could make use of it. I mean, even the poets, the griots back in the day, you know, used to write and sing and you know, feel hollering and poetry talking about how they was going to make their escape from out of slavery. Nobody understood it, you know. The mother people didn't understand it, the masses.
Right.
But we understood where it was coming from.
You know what I mean?
Even the different hairstyles. They couldn't dig it, but they was like maps. Like, look, this is, you got to go down here and make a left, you know, and make it right. But it's important to keep that history and whatnot going with our folks because we're one of the only ethnic groups that don't document and speak about our history the way we should.
Right.
You know what I mean? The way Chinese and Jews and Germans and everybody else talks about their history and can document it. But, you know, most of the history that we know about or our people know about is Martin Luther King.
Yes.
I mean, really?
Yes.
Martin Luther King, you know, and I'm proud of him, but our history goes
way back,
deeper, you know, deeper than that. Poetry, now you said you started, you know, writing poetry later in life, but do you see the marriage between jazz and poetry and how they interact with each other?
Yes, because sometimes if I'm listening to a song, initially I'm listening to everything, but at some point I start listening to it in sections. So I'll listen to it and just listen to the lyrics. And when you sit down and you're listening to the songs and you're just listening to the lyrics, they're just so poetic. They're very poetic. And I think that's true for not just jazz, a lot of genres. If you don't take the time to sit down and really listen to the lyrics, you miss a lot. Mm-hmm. You miss a lot. And one song I'm going to say, and this is not even a jazz song, but you know the song "As" by Stevie Wonder?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of my all-time favorite songs. I said to someone one day, I said, that is like one of the greatest love songs ever. And the person looked at me and said, what? I said, you never listened to the lyrics? And they said, well, yeah. And I said, think about it. Until the day that 8 times 8 times 8 is 4, like, are you listening to what he's saying? He's saying forever and ever and ever and in a day. I said, it's so poetic the way he wrote that. So that's how I feel, you know, about jazz. I'm listening to the songs and I'm listening to the lyrics and I'm like, wow, that's poetic. And if you really write it down, if you just look at the lyrics without the music, you can see the poetic flow.
Yeah, that's it, man. You and I, you sure? What's your mom and pop name? You sure they're not my mom and pop? Because when I put my shows together, my online program, and this has been since 2008, what I would do would take a cappella poetry, and I personally would match it up with who I thought it would flow really good with. Mm-hmm. And I could listen to jazz, and like you said, I could hear poetry at the same time. And on the opposite end, I hear poetry, and then I could hear jazz at the same time. So, you know, I would blend them together. And if you go through the archives of some of the shows that I have up on the website and listen to some where I have a separate poet and a musician, because I mean, some of the musicians have transitioned. Right. You know what I mean? And then some haven't, like, and you can just hear how they just flow together. I put them together, I'm batting 1,000. I'm proud of it. You know what I mean? And it's, yes. You know, that's my art. That's right. My art. I'm not a singer. I'm not a musician. I do poetry too, but those aren't my main things. You know what I mean? But I featured someone, and I know you know who this is. He's transitioned recently, I guess within the past 3 years. Guitarist from South Philly named Pat Azara. Now, if you never heard of him, but he goes by the name of Pat Martino.
Okay.
Azara was his name, his real name.
But okay.
He got his stage name, he turned into Martino. But anyway, I featured him. I did an interview with him back in like 2007 or whatever, 2000. And I matched him up with a poet. And I let him listen to it once I put everything together. And he said, oh, Clayton, this is dynamite. Who's the poet? So I brought the poet in because it actually was the one that helped create the Spotlight on Jazz and Poetry website. Her name was Celestial Dancer. That was her poetic name, with Donna Curvin. And she's from Philly, but she relocated to Northern California. And he just so happened that he was gonna have a gig at Yoshi's in Northern California. So he said, man, he said, it would be nice if I could get her to come to the show. Now I'll bring her up on the stage. Don't you know he did it? He invited her up on the stage, and he had a piece called Moment to Moment. And he brought her up, and she did some poetry to it. Oh man, it was, I swear, wow. I wish I would have been able to do it. But
yeah,
just to show you how musicians love the whole thing with poetry and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Vice versa. So what do you have coming up besides, we'll talk about the October 26th event. Do you have anything coming up, any kind of gigs or anything?
Well, what I have coming up actually are performances with a choir, Freedom Choir,
okay.
Led by Carolyn Neesmith. We're singing tomorrow we're singing at the we're singing at Temple, the Rock Hall,
okay.
At 1715 North Broad Street. The show begins at 4:00. And this is an event that's put together by Opera Philadelphia. So the Freedom Choir actually sings, I would say, like Negro spirituals and gospel music. The Freedom Choir has been around for, I think it was created back in the 70s.
Mm.
So if you go to their website, if you go to CSN website, you will see all the information about the Freedom Choir. We also have another event on October 19th at the Victory Baptist Church, 42nd and Wallace.
Yeah, Wallace Street, yeah.
Yeah. So those are the two things that I have coming up right now. There were two other gigs scheduled for this month, but they were rescheduled. So as soon as I get the dates for those gigs, I'll let you know about that.
Yeah, because I just want to promote whatever it is you're doing. I want to, you know, try to show as much support as possible. That's what I do.
Appreciate it.
You know, yeah. And I would love to, on the 19th. Yeah, I think I could swing that, and show support for that. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
I can't wait till the 26th.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm telling you. And I spoke to Deborah Smith, yesterday. I was trying to line it up so I can get you both together.
Right.
You know what I mean? In order to share, you know, experiences and what's coming up, but she couldn't make today. Yesterday was the only day that I could get her. But she's so very excited, and you know, I stay in my lane with that kind of stuff. So that's why, you know, I put the theme out there.
Mm-hmm.
And ask you to, you know, as far as artists go, you know, just put something together that's going to just, and I know she's like so excited. I know you've spoken with her, but she is so very excited. She is working with you. And the thing for me is the reason I'm so excited about it is because I wanted to put together and show everyone how youth and experience can come together. It's almost like a gumbo can come together and put together something really nice.
Yes.
You know, and she's perfect for that because, like I said, she has that youthful exuberance or whatever, but she's also a professional with her instrument.
Yes.
She is. You know, she is dynamic. And I was telling her, I saw her down at the CEC down there with the Producers Guild, Leo Gadsden. And I seen her perform and my jaw dropped. Not only, she was playing some standards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some classic stuff, which I love. But she also has her own compositions.
Yes.
That she put together. And we're talking about a 20-something year old student at Temple University.
Yes.
North Philly. They go that North Philly thing. You know, but it's just amazing. Not so much, I mean, she's very talented, but just her enthusiasm about jazz. And she said, you know, I never really worked with a poet before. So I can't wait because I've always wanted to do that. And I said, look, you got you got a vocalist and a poet coming at you, so y'all gonna have a ball, I'm telling you. You know, I'm looking forward to that, and everybody in SOJP is looking forward to it. I know you're looking forward to it. She's looking
very
forward
much
to it. Even yes. The sound guy, you know what I mean? Who's also, sometimes he plays the bass with her.
Okay.
But he's the audio engineer as well.
Okay.
He can't wait. He's like, oh man, I can't. This is going to be nice. This is going to be the way he
does
it. This is going to be a groove. I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you got that right. So, I saw you sing. I can't remember. It was a while ago. I can't remember what you sang. And I saw you do some poetry as well. Which one do you like to do the most? I know you sing with a choir, but which one do you like to do most? Or is it an equal thing?
I'm going to say it's an equal thing. It's an equal thing. Now, when I began writing poetry, it was really a release for me. I was just getting my feelings on paper. And in the midst of that, I started realizing that the way I was writing was very poetic. Then I started like really getting into it. I started going around to, you know, different poetry scenes, you know, checking everything out. And a sister named Nish Pew, who's passed on, she had a poetry event. And I went there one day and just, you know, did one of my poems because it was an open mic. And the next week when I came back, she said, listen, can I talk to you for a second? And she said, I want you to feature. And I said, feature what? And she said, you know, I'm going to have the event, and I'm going to feature the women, and I want you to be one of the features. And I said, are you sure? Because, I only did this once or twice. I was really, I said, I did. My girlfriend kind of pushed me to do it. I said, I usually just write for me. And she said, no, they need to hear you. You have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up there and I did it, and I didn't realize how my words and my experiences could affect and relate to other people. You know, we tend to think that the things that we're feeling, the things that we're going through it alone. To have people come to me and say, wow, that really touched me. I've been through that. I've experienced that. That actually made me want to share what I wrote, if for no other reason than to let people know you're not alone. No, you're not alone. So, and I feel the same way about singing, you know, even though they may not be my words, if it's something that I'm singing and someone can relate to, or it just brings them joy, then it brings me joy.
You ever thought about putting your, because I mean, you know, vocalizing in poetry, it's all the same. It's all the same thing. You ever thought about, you know, writing some songs and mm-hmm. putting your poetry to, mm-hmm. you know, to the vocal side of it, like singing mm-hmm. singing?
I've actually been writing songs. I haven't done anything with them yet. I've just been writing and then just kind of putting it to the side. And I've actually written songs and said, okay, this is going to be the first CD. This is going to be the second CD. Like I already laid it out and everything. And also with my poetry, I finally decided that I'm going to do a poetry book. I finally decided I'm going to do that. I will say this. The thing about poetry and writing about your experiences and things that you're feeling is a very, very vulnerable place to be.
Yes.
And sometimes it's hard. You know, you want to let someone know that you've been there, done that, or in it. But some of the experiences are, you know, a little embarrassing or heart-wrenching or whatever, and you're not quite sure how much you want to share. So I will say that's one of the things that kind of held me back from actually doing a book because it was like, how much do I really want to say? How vulnerable do I want to be? But I'm going to do it because it is what it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
You know, I'm the same way. Like, I guess I started really putting stuff on paper back in junior high school.
Okay.
But it took me until, and I was in junior high school, I'm talking about the early, you know, the early 70s. And it took me until around 2005 in order to put some of this stuff out there.
Okay.
And once I did, I felt good, you know, and you know, my wife knew, may she rest in perfection, she knew that I, you know, wrote, and, you know, she used to read a lot of the stuff, and, you know, you know, some of it gets a little heated, because that's where my brain is at sometimes, and she would look at me, she'd be like, and I said, woman, you live this stuff every day, so just relax yourself, you know. But, you know, I tend to lean more toward love, because that's what, you know, I've always wanted to have in my life, was love and wanted to be loved. So now when I try to do something, every program, as you and I had discussed before, I try to do something. You know, this woman a long time ago told me, you need to do something, sing a song, tell a joke, you know.
Yes.
You know, something. You need to do something to put your fingerprint on your shows.
I agree.
Fridays, when we do the thing in April, and we talked about it the weekend, Friday is normally set aside for the poets. Mm-hmm. And it's an open mic thing, and then we party afterwards, but that's when I get up and do a little bit of poetry.
Okay.
And people be looking at me, they be like, this is coming from out of you? You know, because I'm, you know, for a long time, I didn't share anything. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But once I started, I was like, yeah, I got it. I got them now. I got them right where I want them. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yes.
But, you know, I appreciate the whole jazz and poetry thing. But also, you said something earlier, country music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard, who played Ray Charles? Jamie Foxx. When I heard him say it when he was doing Ray, they asked him as Ray, you know, when he was in character, what is it about country music that you like? Because a lot of his band, they was so used to, you know, playing jazz and whatnot, and he decided to do country.
Right.
And he was like, what is it about country music? See, they didn't know. He was raised on that. Matter of fact, his first experience with an organized band was a country band. Mm-hmm. But one thing he said, and it makes sense, was country music and country songs tell a story.
Yes.
And it's a story, like you said, that anybody can relate to. So I was not surprised to hear you say that, but I was glad to hear you say that because I agree 100% about country music.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have his album, by the way, Ray Charles' Country and Western.
Okay.
Album. Yeah, I still got it. That's right.
Okay.
You know, but when you perform, what is it that you hope that the people listening to you take away from the experience? And at the same time, what is it that you draw from the audience that's listening to you perform?
What I hope they take away from the experience? That's a good question.
I come up with one every now and then.
Yeah, I know. I hope that, you know what, I hope they take away from it. I hope they take away my feelings or love or appreciation for what I'm singing. That's what I hope they take away. And I hope I'm delivering that. I really do hope I'm delivering that. Yes, I'm singing this song and I want you to know I'm feeling this song and I want you to feel what I'm feeling about this song. And I do draw a lot on the audience. You know, if I'm looking out at the audience and I see a foot tapping, I see a smile, it makes me feel like, okay, I'm delivering what I'm hoping to deliver.
I know for myself, in writing, and maybe it's why, you know, I didn't share stuff for a long time. See, I like all kinds of poetry, whether it's haikus or limericks or whatever. I like it all. I don't, my opinion, I don't particularly like poetry slamming.
Okay.
Because I think that's more like performance. And then when they're going through, you know, their performance or whatever, I can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
I just don't get it because I'm so much looking at them, you know, and shouting. And look, for me, I like it to be nice and mellow, jazz. I'd like it to be like, I can say a poem, but I'm not really saying it for them. I'm saying it for me. Now, if you take what I'm saying and it does something for you, then that's wonderful. If it doesn't, then that's wonderful too. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
That's, you know, because I'm actually doing it for me. It's an extra added bonus when you tell me that you like it. But you know how, I know you've probably been on message boards or whatever before and you share poetry and other people share poetry and then they come and critique your poetry. And I'm like, you know, what are you saying? Why are you trying to critique my poetry? Just listen to it and take, you know, absorb it if you want, or leave it alone.
Right.
Because I can't come to you, Mama T, you know, your poetry should be this, and you should say that, and I was expecting you to do that. You're going to look at me like I'm crazy. You're going to look at
thank
me like
you.
He is insane. What is his problem?
Right. You know, my thing would be, thank you, you should try that. Thank you, you should try that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about the poetry that I write. So, you know, and the way that I put it together with jazz is the whole, why I think it's married, is the whole improvisational side of it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Because yes.
You know, what you feel about that? Improv.
I love improv. You know, some years ago, for about 2 or 3 years, I took movement and acting at Freedom Theater. And whenever it came time to, you know, work on a script, a lot of times I fumbled and I couldn't figure out, well, why is this so hard for me? Why is this so hard? And they said, well, you sing, you perform, right? I said, yeah. They said, well, it's the same thing. I said, but yeah, something about acting, it feel like it's a different, I don't know, it's a different realm and I have to try to internalize it to get out when I'm trying to get out. But when we started doing improv, oh my God, it was fabulous because it gave me the freedom to just flow. And I think that was the thing that in learning the scripts, I had to, I guess, started acting like they were my words. So that I can have the freedom to just move and flow the way I want. So improvisation, I love it because you're not following down the line. You can go left, you can go right, up and down, turn it around. There's so many different ways you can do it and express yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I like improvisation. I do.
And that's like...
And thinking off the top of your head, just like that. I love it.
That's why it used to be. Now, I don't know from experience, because I wasn't around at this time, but I used to hear my parents talk about it. But, you know, different musicians or whatever would have gigs at a certain place. And then after hours, they all would push up to like Minton's Playhouse, for example, up in New York. Everybody would have gigs at, you know, at the Blue Note, at the Village Vanguard, and the Village Gate, or whatever, all these clubs. And then after it was over, they would all go to Minton's Playhouse and just jam, like a jam session.
Yeah.
And that's who they would pick out. Like, if you get up on the stage, you better know what you're doing. Because you will, they'll kick you off the stage and be like, you ain't ready for this here. This smoke here, you ain't ready. But there was nothing, they wasn't playing a particular song. They wasn't following a script. They was just doing what came natural. And, you know, if you solo, you know, if you did a vocal thing and then somebody would follow you on the piano and do their thing. And so that whole improvisation is so important. Same with, you know, the same thing with poetry, because I remember one time I got up, you know, to do a poem and I completely just drew a blank.
Yeah.
From what I was supposed to say.
Yes.
And then I paused for a minute and it was a collaborative piece that I did with this young lady. So I figured that she would help get me back on task. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But she stood back and looked at me and was like, what are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. And I was, sweat start coming down. And then I just said, you know what? I just started talking about what seemed like I was talking about something else. And it flowed right back into, and then it
that's
got me back on point. You know
that's
what I mean?
So, that's right.
You know, so I know what you're talking about when you're talking about the whole improv thing. It's a part of it. So you're also into promoting your own events. So talk about that a little bit.
Okay. So in 2015, I produced and hosted my own jazz event called Jazzy Blue News. Or Jazzy Blue Afternoons at the Urban Art Gallery. It started off as a monthly event, but that became really overwhelming. I just did not realize how much would really be involved doing this on a monthly basis. So I started doing it on a quarterly basis. And I just, you know, had different jazz bands perform. And it really started off more so jazz and blues, but then, you know, some R&B, you know, came in, but I did let them know. I said, this is really supposed to be a jazz thing. So then they would just jazz the R&B up a little bit, you know. And another thing I did was I started a poetry event also at the Urban Art Gallery. I had one that was for men only. Well, all the poets were men. And another one, all the poets were women. Some of the women have since passed on, rest their soul. But at the Urban Art Gallery also. Now, I will say this. COVID kind of took its toll on that. And I do intend to go back to doing these events again. One of the biggest challenges for me after things kind of started opening up again and people started coming out again is that I purposely had my event at the Urban Art Gallery. If you've never been there, you have to go and check it out. Shout out to Carl Morris. The aesthetics of the place, it's just a really nice, comfortable, intimate space. And I wanted to have an event where people came in as strangers and left feeling like they've been jamming all afternoon with their family and friends. And that's exactly what I got. A lot of people came in, did not know each other. But by the time the event was over, people were giving each other hugs and high fives and, you know, everything like that. And it was just a really, really great event. So I do plan to start that again, probably next, you know, in the next year, just trying to get everything worked out.
Yeah.
So that was a really nice event. And our host, you know, had little games and, you know, things like that, food, wine, really nice event.
Yeah. That's cool. Jazzy Blue News. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we sitting here with a multifaceted young lady here, vocalist, poet, promoter, you know, producer, actress, you know, dancer, you know what I mean? Oh man, this has just been so much fun.
Yes.
And like I said, Tony Mama T, where did that come from?
Well, it seemed like whenever I was in a group setting or working with a group of people, working with bands, this was years ago, I always ended up being the mama of the group. I always end up being the one saying, okay, wait, let's do this. Oh no, we have to stop. We got to concentrate. Nope, let's get back on, you know, track. It seemed, and then not only that, it just seems like even just meeting people, it was like, even just in general, just meeting people, it was like, yeah, this is like mom. Hey, mom. So I was like, okay, there it is. Mama T. Everybody's calling me mom.
Mama T. That's all right. And I'm going to call you Mama T too. Because I got so used to saying it now. I'll be like, yeah, Mama T. Here she come. So, look, I want to really thank you for taking time out from your schedule in order to have this conversation. Because I definitely wanted people to get a chance to meet you here and then get a chance to come and see you do your thing on October the 26th. And anytime you have any kind of events or gigs or anything coming up, just let me know so I can push it as well. Because I like I just like to support artists in whatever they're doing. You know, you'd be on the podcast and it's going to be on YouTube and then all the other feeds, you know, the Amazon podcast, I'm on all of them. So, you know, this interview with you will go up on all those different media outlets or whatever podcast. So this has been so cool, man. I really appreciate taking time. And you know, I could chop it up as far as talking. I could talk 100 years in a row. You know what I mean?
So can
just
I
keep going back to back to back to back.
Yes,
but,
yes.
I'm so glad that you had the time to and wanted to be a part of this Autumn Leaves event that's coming up. Autumn Leaves, and that was actually a suggestion from your friend Kim Pedro.
But it's perfect.
Yeah, and we thought so, because every year we try to think, or every event we try to think of a theme. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That would, you know, number one, that would be attractive. But also to be able to, you know, put together some nice music and poetry and whatnot surrounding that theme. And I know y'all got something planned that's going to be crazy. But Autumn Leaves being Autumn will be leaving, right? Around that time. And also, Autumn Leaves is what falls from the trees. And it shows just a change of the season and whatnot. So it's like the verb and the noun are relevant. You know what I mean? To what we're doing. So that takes place, ladies and gentlemen, on October 26, 2024, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., which was a suggestion from one of our more established citizens at our last event. And it was something that I had always wanted to do, an event in the fall, but an afternoon event. And, you know, we want to make sure people, like you said, can get to other, you know, functions that they need to, but also some of our more established citizens like to be home.
Yes.
And not be out too late.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, they'll appreciate this event that's coming up, and it's going to be food. It's a cash bar, but we didn't want that headache. So if you like to imbibe, then, you know, bring your pocketbook with you. But it's going to be just a fantastic event. And it's going to be in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, 2632 East County Line Road, which is in Ardmore, right outside of, you know, the city line areas, right outside of Philadelphia. So, and they have plenty of parking. There's no excuse for not coming out, everybody. Don't even try. You get a chance to see a wonderful quartet led by Miss Deborah Smith, and also a wonderful vocalist, poetess, Tony Mama T. Curtis.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
This is going to be fine. So again, thank you very much. Don't go anywhere. Thank you very much for hanging out with me for an hour or so, talking about your artistry and what's going on with you, with the choir and everything. If people want to catch up with you and look you up, how can they do that?
My social media, Instagram is Mama T, M-O-M-M-A-T 611. Facebook, Tony Mama T Curtis.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention really quickly, there's two people I would like to mention really quickly. That's Valerie Dunstan and Nautula Banks. And I'm mentioning them because they were my partners in Jazzy Blue News. So I want to make sure that I, you know, mention them. and I would definitely like to thank you. I thank you for bringing me into this, your vision. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome. And I'm definitely getting the word out, not only about October, but letting people know about the event in April and letting them know that this event in April will be a weekend long event. So I'm just getting them started. I'm getting them ready.
Yeah, getting them ready now. Tell them.
Yeah, getting them ready.
Thank you very much for taking your time to come hang out with me.
Thank you.
You know, North Philly's own Tony Mama T Curtis. Thank you very much. I wish you continued success in all of your endeavors, whatever they may be.
Thank you so much.
Just wish you success.
And wish you the same.
Well, that's all right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking time out from your schedule to join me here at Spotlight Conversations, where we have the wonderful Tony Mama T. Curtis. I hope you have a wonderful week.
And
I'll see you next time.
Yes.
Peace.